Wild night of baseball last night with shakeups in both the American League and the National League wildcard races. We'll break it all down and more on this episode of First Pitch. Yes, welcome on into First Pitch for Wednesday, September 18th. I'm your host, Lindsey Crosby. You can follow me on Twitter at Crosby Baseball. He's the third member of our team, Troy Brock. You can follow him on Twitter at Troy B Baseball. Thank you for sticking with us through some injury concerns. We were both on the IL yesterday and didn't get a show out. But last night's games, Troy, more than made up for us missing yesterday. And I want to start off with the Padres and Astros. Absolutely wild game here. Houston won it 4-3 in 10 innings. Despite Jose Altuve kind of getting off on the wrong foot there. ugly game, right? Offensively, these teams combined to go 3-for-24 with runners in scoring position, and they strand 17. But I'm trying to figure out what the bigger story of the game is. Is it Jose Altuve getting ejected in like at the end of the game? Is it his backup making the game saving put out to end the game on Manny Machado's ground ball?
I think that's been something the Astros have been good at for years now. Their entire dynasty run, they've just had a plethora of depth, and it showed last night with Jose Altuve's backup coming in and making that fantastic play to end the game in the 10th inning.
Yeah, for those of you who missed what actually happened, Jose Altuve grounded out. But he correctly pointed out that they did not notice the ball come off of his foot. So he fouled the ball off of his foot and it went into play versus just being a conventional ground out. They reviewed it. After review, they had the call stand that it was a ground out. And he took his shoe off to show the umpire where the ball hit his toe. They ejected him for that. I guess if you take your shoe off to show up an umpire, they're going to eject you every time, whether or not you're right. But the Astros still come through with the victory. So with the win now, you go to the West. The Astros are 5 games up on the Seattle Mariners with 10 to play. It looks like as of right now, they're going to end up getting the 3 seed. So they will have to play in the wild card round. But safe to say the American League West is over.
Yeah. Five games ahead, 10 games left. I don't think the Mariners are coming back, especially the way that they played the Yankees yesterday. I think that the Astros have essentially sealed the deal.
Yeah. And on the flip side of that, the Padres, despite the loss, still 2.5 games up in the NL wild card. We'll get to that in a minute because the Diamondbacks and Mets are now tied for that final wild card spot. We'll get to that in kind of just a minute there. But I do want to stick with the American League, and I want to look at the American League wild card race. The Detroit Tigers beat the Kansas City Royals 3-1 in 10 innings yesterday. Before we get into the Tigers, though, I want to acknowledge what we saw, the historical stuff we saw from Bobby Witt Jr.
Junior's running, a bobble, and stolen base number 30. And with that, Bobby Witt Jr. becomes the first shortstop in Major League history to have 2 30-30 seasons.
Troy, what a stat. The first shortstop in Major League history to have 2 30-30 seasons. So, okay, here's the list of the shortstops that have 1 30-30 season. Barry Larkin, 1996. A-Rod, 1998. Jimmy Rollins in 07. Hanley Ramirez in 08. Francisco Lindor and Bobby Witt Jr. in 23. And now Bobby Witt Jr. now. So what is more impressive? The fact that he's the first shortstop in history to do it twice, or that he's the only player ever, regardless of position, to have multiple 30-30 seasons through his age 24 season?
I think with just that list you named off, I think that the first shortstop ever to do it twice is more impressive, in my opinion. That's insane. I think that if Francisco Lindor would have gotten off to a better start this season and been healthy down the stretch, he may have joined Bobby Witt Jr. on that list of shortstops to do it twice. But Bobby Witt Jr. being the first shortstop to do it twice, that's just insane. And at only 24 years old, there is so much more to come from Bobby Witt Jr.
Yeah. On your note there, Lindor has 31 homers. He has 27 stolen bases, but he is out with the back spasms. We do not know when he's going to come back. And when he does come back, we don't know he's going to be able to run enough to pick up three more stolen bases between now and the end of the year. So that could be it. But the real reason I wanted to talk about this game was to talk about the Detroit Tigers. They've been one of the hottest teams of the second half. They are now just a game and a half out of that final wild card spot in the American League. They're a game and a half behind the Twins, three behind the Royals. And they're doing it really kind of like they've gotten a lot of great contributions from a lot of their youngsters. Parker Meadows is a guy that was atrocious to the year. They sent him down. They brought him back up briefly. I think it was in May. I don't think he got a single hit that entire time. He was up in May. He went back down. He came back in July. Looked okay, but they sent him back down. Since he came up on August 3rd, this is a stretch of 37 games. He started 36 of those. He's batting 306, 24 runs, 22 RBI. Only has one homer, but he's stolen five bases. He's also picked up eight total extra base hits in that span. And he's doing all of this out of the nine hole. So he's producing from the bottom of the lineup and turning things over. Is this Tigers lineup with all of this youth, with your Colt Keith, with your Parker Meadows and all of that, is this a lineup that you could see possibly contending for the division next year? Or are they looking at this as more of a, this is going to be a wild card contending team next year?
With the way the American League Central has played out just yearly, I think that it's 100% a lineup that could compete for the division next year. All of them having another year. It's a young lineup. All of them having another year of experience under their belt will work wonders for them and just make them that much better next year.
Yeah. Looking at last night's lineup, kind of going through this, I want to say seven of these nine guys are within 2 years of service time. You know, it's Josh Young came in as Jace Young came in as a pinch hitter last night, but Matt Vierling's not been up incredibly long. Riley Green's looking on, I think maybe coming into his third year next year. Parker Henry Molloy is still new. Colt Keith obviously was this year. Spencer Torkelson is on his second year. Trey Sweeney came up just a couple weeks ago when Javi Baez got hurt. Dylan Dingler at catcher was promoted just recently. And then Parker Meadows. So incredibly young lineup. You can see the youth in some of these stat lines. Molloy's batting 208. Young's batting 214. Dingler's still batting 123 at this point. But we've seen so many instances this year of these young players struggling at first with that transition from AAA to the majors, which has never been as large as it is right now. And then they turn around and they just start raking in the second half. And I think Parker Meadows and the stat we just gave is a great example of that. Bonus question for you. Do you think the Tigers are able to pass the Twins and get that final wild card spot?
I do think so. The Twins, you know, they've dealt with a lot of injuries as your Braves had this year. Mm-hmm. And they're even with Byron Buxton and Carlos Correa back for the last 12 games or so, they're still really working them like catchers. They're giving them days off in day games after night games. They're not going to play every day down the rest of the way. And I think that that might hurt them. I think it's good to try and keep Buxton and Correa healthy, but I think in the long run, it's going to hurt their playoff chances and that the Tigers can pass them in the wild card race.
Minnesota still has two against Cleveland, three against Baltimore for their tough matchups left. Detroit has one more against Kansas City, and they play the Orioles three times. They took two out of three from Baltimore last weekend. And speaking of Baltimore, what is up with the Baltimore Orioles right now? They got blanked 10-0 by the Giants. This wasn't all the Orioles being bad. Blake Snell was phenomenal. Six innings pitched, one hit, two walks to 10 strikeouts. But the Orioles are 3-7 in their last 10 games. They're now four games back in the American League East, with only 11 games to play. I think, one, safe to say the American League East is over. The Yankees are going to win the division.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah, but what does Baltimore need to do to maintain their position in, I mean, if nothing else, and even in the wild card? They are up four games on Kansas City for the top wild card seed. But like, what do they need to do to maintain in the wild card and have a chance of winning when they get to October?
They have to figure out their pitching. Their pitching has been an issue for them in the second half of the season. In the first half of the season, they ranked sixth in baseball in team ERA with it was somewhere around 3.60. And now they're 21st in baseball in the second half of the season in team ERA. Gross. Yeah.
That is absolutely gross.
It's been a massive drop off.
Yeah. And like you look at right now, you have your rotation is just one of those where you've got hurt guys. Right. Grayson Rodriguez is still out. Obviously, you're not getting Kyle Bradish back. You're not getting John Means back. You're not getting Tyler Wills back. They've all got they all come back from Tommy John. And so it's Corbin Burns, prospect Cade Povich, Dean Kramer, Zach Eflin. They sent Rodgers down to AAA soon after that trade from Miami. Albert Suarez got the start last night and wasn't really good. 3 1/3 innings, 4 runs on 6 hits. He took the loss. Craig Kimbrel didn't help out. Pitched in a non-save situation in the ninth inning, and gave up 6 runs on 3 hits in 2 walks and 2/3 of an inning. Pushed his ERA on the season to over 5. Wow. So just absolutely torched there. I know there's a thing about closers in non-save situations, but that's incredibly surprising. I do think, along with the pitching, your other concern if you're Baltimore, you're getting the production you need from your top guys, right? Gunnar Henderson's batting 280. Adley Rutschman took a step back. He's still batting 250. Anthony Santander, 40 home run season, although he's only batting 240. But so many of your deadline moves and your call-ups aren't working out. I mentioned Rodgers already getting sent down. But Eloy Jimenez was your DH last night. He goes 0 for 2. He gets pulled for Hess and Kirsten. And guess what? Kirsten goes 2 for 2. Maybe you should have just had him DH the whole time. But Kobe Mayo was called up to play. He played for both first base and third base last night. He goes 0 for 2. He's pinch hit for by Jackson Holliday in the eighth. Jackson Holliday goes 0 for 1. So they combine to go 0 for 3. Both of those guys are Mayo's batting 081. Holiday's batting 169. I actually dropped a piece over freelancing with Sports Illustrated. Dropped a piece over on the Baltimore Orioles site about how Jackson Holliday has still not been able to figure it out, even in this second call-up. He has 4 home runs since being called up, but 3 were in that first week that he was back. And you're in a situation, they just don't have any other options. Their depth is starting, between the trades and between injuries, they're just starting to lose their depth that they had in the infield. Right now, Ramon Urias is on the IL with a sprained ankle. Jorge Mateo had elbow surgery. He's out for the year. Jordan Westberg has a fractured hand. And then they traded away Connor Norby. They've traded away multiple infield options. And so now Jackson Holliday is about all you really have to play second base. And they're having to platoon him, unfortunately, with LaVon Soto, who they got off of waivers in July.
Right.
That's kind of the situation they're in right now. And so they feel like a lock to make the postseason still, right? Like, they have plenty of games up on everybody else in the wild card, but it's hard to see where the Orioles are going to actually be able to go and make any noise in October, simply because they have so many questions in both the rotation and the lineup. And that's not a place where we were just a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, not at all. Not at all. Like you said, I think they got caught up in the hype of Jackson Holliday being the number one prospect for so long that they rushed him to the majors. I don't think he was ready.
Now, I get it, because the video that they dropped for opening day where Jackson Holliday's call up, the very first voice you hear on the video, and I should pull this video for the show. The very first voice you hear for the on the video is mine, actually, from a podcast talking about the Orioles prospects. So I understand hearing me hype up Jackson Holliday and why they'd want to go ahead and call him up. But it is a little bit concerning, I think, for me, the strikeouts for being considered as a kid, not a ton of power, but a great hit tool, to have more strikeouts than games played since his call up is a little bit concerning, and shows me that in retrospect, it feels like they only called him back up because they had no other choice. not because they thought he was ready because of all those injuries and the moves. But either way, Baltimore's got stuff to figure out. Congratulations, Yankees, on winning the division. If this comes back to bite me, that's going to be super awkward. But I have a feeling it's not going to. I have a feeling it's not going to come back to bite me. Yeah, so, okay, let's get into the quick pitch real quick. Couple interesting stories I want to get to kind of quickly. We have some fun videos to play here. First is in the minor. Double-A levels in their playoffs right now. And so the Somerset Patriots, Yankees organization, taking on the Hartford Yard Goats, which is the Colorado Rockies. And Spencer Jones, outfield prospect for the Yankees, a guy compared to Aaron Judge because he's also like 6'6", 6'7". In the third inning, did this.
Gas him up. Jones clubs one high in the air, deep right center field, into the New Jersey night. It's way gone for Spencer Jones. Bombs away. 115 off the bat for Jones. Off the baseball's number 20 prospect. 453 feet for Jones. A mammoth shot ties the game. 1-1 in the third inning.
So Spencer Jones goes deep. His farthest hit ball of the season, 453 feet. His hardest hit ball of the season at 115 miles an hour. And you heard the commentator there. I don't have his name, but I feel bad for that. He didn't do it off of a scrub, right? Chase Dollander, top 50 prospect according to MLB Pipeline. I think one of the top two pitching prospects for the Colorado Rockies. Spencer Jones, if he can figure out the strikeout issues, because Spencer Jones has strikeout concerns, if he can figure out the strikeout issues, how important is it going to be for the Yankees to be able to add a dude who can do something like this to their lineup and potentially have him and Jason Dominguez in the same outfield as Aaron Judge and maybe Juan Soto?
Yeah, that would be insane. Just him and Judge alone being able to put up those crazy power numbers, that would be an insane addition to their outfield. The question I have is, how long would they push back his call up for Alex Verdugo?
It feels like Jones is going to take a little bit to get ready, right? I mean, batting 259 in Double A, he's not technically repeating the level. He only got 17 games there last year, but he's got 200 strikeouts in 122 games. One of the higher strikeout totals in the minors. It's something. I mean, he's hit 17 homers. He has a 789 OPS, which has been remarkably consistent at just about every level. Between High A and Double A last year, he had a 780 OPS. So he's just about the same performer at every single level. But a situation where he's striking out a ton when he does come up, because those long strides, he can play center. Jason Dominguez can also play center. We'll touch on this in a second, but I feel like these over 30 guys like Aaron Judge, playing them in center is a physical risk. And so I could see a scenario where when Giancarlo, assuming they re-sign Soto, which is a big if, and something we're going to get into this offseason, assuming they re-sign Soto, Giancarlo Stanton, I believe, has one more season left on his deal. I could see a situation where your 2026 lineup is Aaron Judge and Juan Soto rotating between right field and DH, Spencer Jones in left field, Jason Dominguez in center, and hopefully Alex Verdugo, you know, launched into space. But it feels like that's your next kind of wave of a competitive outfield and a competitive thing, as well as being able to keep Judge healthy because he's not having to do all the running that you do in center field. And we'll get to that in a second when it comes to Mike Trout. But in the meantime, it's fun to see that, like, yes, this dude is incredibly powerful, incredibly great, like great swing, but also glaring issue when it comes to the strikeouts. He had 155 in 117 games last year. And again, 200 this year and 122, although he was in Double A for most of that.
Yeah, that is a lot of strikeouts.
That's a ton of strikeouts.
Work on that.
Yeah, a dude that that came up and is actually playing pretty well. And Acuna hit a home run last night, and it hurt the Braves.
For another 8,000 at bats, he drives this one deep left field toward the wall. It's out of here. Luis Acuna with his first
Major League home run.
Luis Angel Acuña, the younger brother of Ronald Acuña Jr., goes 3-for-4 last night, hits his first career home run. The Mets win 10-1 over the Washington Nationals. One, he did get the ball back. The fan that caught the ball got it back to the team. There's a picture of Acuña with the ball in a, you know, already authenticated in a little holding case. So he got the ball back. But the Mets winning 10-1 over the Washington Nationals, combined with Atlanta dropping a 3-run lead and losing to Cincinnati 6-5, means that the Mets are now 2 games up on Atlanta for the final wild card spot. At this point, and granted, and full disclosure to everybody, you are not a Braves fan. You are also not a Mets fan. At this point, does it feel like the Atlanta Braves are going to make the postseason? Because going into yesterday's games, FanGraphs gave them better odds of making the postseason than they did the Mets.
Yeah, I think that the way the Mets have just turned it on down the stretch with the power of Grimace, I think that that is going to propel them into the playoffs. And Atlanta Braves have gone cold, really, at the wrong time. Their best hitter on the season has just disappeared in Marcell Ozuna. And I think that I think the Mets are going to take that final wild card spot.
Yeah, so re-upping the playoff odds as of this morning, the Mets are now up to 71.1% to make the postseason. Braves are down from 60% to 52.1% to make the postseason. So practically a coin flip. It still feels very, that still feels too high for me for the Braves. But I think part of that is they do have 3 games against the New York Mets on the next to last series of the year. And so I think that's kind of what you're looking at there. So either way, excited for Luis Acuña. Also, his swing is the exact same as his brother's. It makes sense, but that's nuts. And it's going to be fun to watch those two guys square off next season. Obviously, Ronald is now back with the team, but he's not playing because of the ACL tear. So when the Mets come to Atlanta that next to last series, I'm sure we'll see one of the games where the two brothers will take the lineup cards out and pose for photos at home plate. But they won't actually face off on the field until next season. A guy who was facing off with one of the more impressive talents in baseball and hit making history is Ian Happ, who did this against the Athletics yesterday.
Happ the other way, pretty well struck, going back is Brown, looking, to the basket, and it's a 1-run game. Opposite field homer for Ian Happ, his second of the night, and he matches his career high with number 25.
Don't see him hit.
Ian Happ goes opposite field off of Mason Miller on a 103 mile an hour fastball. It is the fastest pitch hit for a homer in the pitch tracking era, so since 2008. What's more impressive, that he hit 103 for a homer at all, or that he did it opposite field?
Yeah, I think it's hitting 103 for a homer at all, especially since that's the fastest pitch to be hit for a home run. He was able to catch up with it. He was obviously a little late on it. He hit it the opposite way. Yeah. But just being able to catch up with it at all, and where the pitch was, it was up. Catching up with a 103 mile an hour fastball that high up, that's crazy.
It absolutely is. I had a note the other day. I was doing on the Braves Today Substack, I was doing something about pitcher locations and things like that. And one of my big takeaways was there's been 20 middle fastballs thrown at 100 or 2 or harder this season, and none of them have even been a hit, never mind a home run. And so I may have to finally, if I can confirm that that was in fact in zone 5, middle, I may have to update my stats there. Okay, moving, we touched on this a second ago, but center field, Mike Trout met with reporters the other day and talked about moving off of center field. He's obviously been injury prone the last couple of years. He's played 200, like, by the end of this season, there will have been 648 Angels games since the start of 2021. He would have played only 266 of those, only 29 this season. And he said, quote, "My goal is to be in that batter's box in the field every single day. Whether that's moving to a corner or DHing more, that's something I'll leave up to the front office to come up with a plan. Where I'm at and what's happened in the last few years," and he's referring to the injuries, "I'm definitely going to try to explore every option that can keep me out there." I think we're both probably in agreement. I'm going to go on a limb here and say, yes, this is absolutely a good idea. Why do you think it's taken so long for the player and the team to both say, hey, we need to do something to minimize the wear and tear on your legs from playing center field?
As far as the player, I'm not really sure. It's probably the competitor in him that just wants to prove that he can still play center field at a high level. As far as the team goes, they have made questionable decisions for a while now. And one big glaring one being not trading Shohei Ohtani at the deadline last year, which I 100% think they should have done. But Mike Trout moving to a corner outfield spot or even full-time DHing is the move that needs to be made going forward to keep him healthy and keep their best player and one of, if not the best player in the game, on the field for more than just 29 games.
Yeah, Mike Trout, when he started this year, I remember he homered on opening day off of Corbin Burns, and we're all like, oh man, this is the Mike Trout resurgent year, and he barely played.
Yeah,
and this is something I think people, because he's been hurt so much, I think people forget. We have short memories. I think people forget how good Mike Trout has been. I mean, he's won 3 MVP awards. He was a unanimous Rookie of the Year. He has 4 other second place finishes in MVP, as well as a 4th, a 5th, and an 8th. I mean, he's legitimately also, he wasn't an All-Star in 2020, although there was, I just realized after I said that, nobody was an All-Star in 2020. So never mind there. But yeah, it's just something where he's been, from almost from his first full season, he's been one of the greatest players in baseball history. But again, he's only played 266 games in the last 4 full seasons. You got to do something here. And moving him to a corner with occasional DH days feels like, if that's what you have to do, I feel like the benefit of having Mike Trout in your lineup and not getting the full defensive value of him in center field is worth it's worth the small fielding hit, having him play a less premium position of right field while you put Taylor Ward in left and you have somebody in center, maybe a Kyren Paris in a year or two, versus not having him at all. And so this is kind of overdue here. This needed to happen. A guy who we also have seen DHing all year, Shohei Ohtani, hits a home run last night in the Dodgers' 11-9 loss to the Miami Marlins. Gives him 48 homers and 48 stolen bases on the year. At this point, 11 games left, do you think 50-50 is a lock, or is there a chance he doesn't get it? And if he doesn't get it, which one of those things does he miss out on?
I think it's a lock. I think that even with the cold stretch that he experienced in Atlanta with no home runs in Atlanta, I think he can still get 51-51 with both, if not another stolen base or two on top of that. But I think he's going to get 50-50.
Yeah, I feel like the stolen bases are almost the easier part, because you can pick two of those up and, you know, in one inning, if you get on first, steal second, steal third. And so it feels like the homers are the hardest part, especially if you're in Miami. It's not a great hitter's ballpark. He did strike out 3 times last night. I didn't get a chance to watch this game closely, but I wonder if he was pressing just a little bit, trying to get those home runs and do things like that. And again, they did lose the game. I mean, they did. They tried to come back. They scored 2 in the 9th, but they did lose this game. So I could see them trying to push a little bit harder to try to win. But either way, I'm really excited to see that we're going to see history made again. Obviously, he's the only 48-48 guy. Nobody has been able to do to this level on both sides of it, right? It's always been 41-43. And then Ronald last year was 41, like 70-something. But first time we've seen a guy be 48-48. He's going to hit 50-50. So,
oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. This has been First Pitch for Wednesday, September 18th. You can follow me on Twitter at Crosby Baseball. You can follow Troy on Twitter at Troy B Baseball. If you're listening on audio, do us a favor, leave us a 5-star review. If you're on YouTube, leave a comment down below, subscribe to the channel, hit the notification bell so you know when we go live with new episodes. And until next time, this has been First Pitch.